Most of the people were going about their business, getting ready for a big party and dance, but they smiled and smiled as they passed Johnny. Two German pilots from the African base were sitting in front of a fire drinking something. The third pilot was upstairs flying patrol, the rumble of the motors faint due to his extreme altitude. Johnny told them in Cyclo they should relax and enjoy themselves, and they just looked at him respectfully. Johnny knew they had completely different orders. Two on alert for scramble, sleeping in their planes, with the radio on, one ship always in the air. Johnny realized all this good cheer and festivity in the air was dulling his awareness of the facts of today. They were at war with powerful forces. The colonel led him to a small knoll and with an expansive hand showed him how great this country was. There was wild cotton, enough to clothe thousands. There was wild wheat and wild oats and herds of sheep and cattle enough to feed hundreds of thousands. Those ruins way over there had been a city full of factories, and although the machines didn't work with existing motors, Tom Smiley thought he could get some looms running, which made Johnny wonder whether they didn't have another Angus on their hands in Tom Smiley. Did Johnny know there was a tomb over to the southeast, way over, where the Emperor of the World was buried? A Mongol named Timur Ilenc. Nearly 2,000 years ago, he had ruled the world. It was a fact. He would have to take Johnny over there and show him the tomb. It said so right on it. Johnny had heard quite enough about Hitlers and Napoleons and such. He had often wondered whether, if such vermin had not been so intent on personally ruling the world, man might have had the cultural advancement to repel the Cyclo invasion. He had heard some theory that it required war to invent technology, and he thought that must be a Cyclo maxim. But he didn't tell Colonel Ivan that. He admired the truly beautiful view. The base? The colonel responded to Johnny's question. It was up there, not very far away from here. He'd give him a whole tour tomorrow. As they started down, a big, jolly-looking Scot and two aides met them. It was Sir Andrew McNulty, the head of the Federation and chief of all the coordinators. He had gotten the word Johnny was here and had just flown in. He had a pleasing manner and cheery laugh, very admired by his extensive and busy corps of coordinators. Johnny was very glad to see him, for the business he was here for involved the movement of tribes. He complimented Sir Andrew on the magnificent work the coordinators were doing, and Sir Andrew thanked him for saving the lives of that pair in Africa. Johnny knew he could get along with this man. Good. About sunset, the party was ready, and the big square box constellation in the sky was well down before it finished. Dances and music and more dances. Spanish dances. The dance of the bear hunt from Siberia. Wild leaping dances from the Caucasus. Firelight and laughter. Good food and drink. Since it seemed everyone had to clink a cup with Johnny, and since he had never done much drinking, he had quite a head the next morning when the colonel, all bustling efficiency, broke him out. After a bit of breakfast, they trooped off in a mob to see the ancient defense base. The colonel said that they had all worked on it, and they were all going along to make sure he liked it, and to straighten anything up he didn't like. They were no longer in their party clothes. They were here now to go back to work as needed. The ancient base was entered through a tunnel that was masked by overhangs, built to resist nuclear bombing, and to serve as a command post, it was deep. Due to occasional earthquakes in this area, it had been built very strong. It lacked the polish and finish of the American base, but it was even bigger. They had lighted it with Cyclo mine lamps. They had buried the vast numbers of dead with honors. They had swept everything up with Cyclo mine sweepers flown in from Grozny. Tom Smiley had gotten the water lines working. The colonel said he really hadn't intended for him and his men to help so much, for this should be an American base. But they had the experience, and so they had pitched in. The amounts of stores were vast. Uniforms were not as well packaged and sealed as the American ones had been, but much of the stores were useful. Possibly the quality was even better. Look at these portable flamethrowers. They still worked. 100,000 assault rifles called AK-47 had been found, totally preserved, and they had retailored the ammunition with and without radiation. They presented Johnny with one that they had chrome molecular plated down at Grozny, and 5,000 rounds of guaranteed no-misfire ammunition in clips. The Russian premier had apparently never gotten here, but his command post had been ready. Johnny thought that must be a picture of him, that big one on the wall, but he was told no, that was a picture of a former Tsar named Lenin. Possibly in the time of Timur Ilenk, they were not sure, but it was evidently a very respected picture, so they had left it. Level after level, passage after passage, they trooped through the vast base, stopping now and then to show Johnny things, smiling at his praise, very happy that he was pleased with it. But the main thing Johnny was happy with was the underground hangars. Here was room for thousands of planes. The very thing. Storage. Exactly what he had hoped to find. They had used blade scrapers to push out the crumbled ruins that they said were MiGs and other craft. Johnny could not read the alphabet, but many of them could, and they showed him some of the labels they had salvaged before pushing the mounds of warplanes out. MiGs meant airplane in Russian, they said. The hangars had their own ports and entrances, just what Johnny wanted. They showed him the tactical nuclear and other nuclear manuals. They were all in Russian, but one old fellow from the Hindu Kush assured Johnny he could read them. There was a lot of nuclear weapons storage to the north, and they were not going near it until they got the manuals read. There were a lot of silos, too, that had powder rockets still in them, but the powder was dangerous to handle. It had gone bad, but little pieces blew up if you hit them hard with a hammer. Not very useful. They also showed him a coal mine nearby where the black rocks burned. So heating and fuel were handy. Now they were going to get a lot of these black rocks. They were going to harvest a lot of that wild wheat. They had plans. Johnny said the plans were great, and they had done so very well that they were great too. He was very, very pleased. He shook the hands of hundreds of people. It was not until dawn the following day that he could leave for Tibet. What had been intended as a 2-hour check of a base had developed into a 2-day tour. He was amazed what people could do if you let them just get at it without a lot of government restricting them. He was wearing the new helmet when he left. The colonel saw to that. Buckled down, too. The colonel didn't care if he couldn't hear. Motors were bad for the ears, and at high altitudes, his ears would get cold. Johnny laughed at him, but he wore it.